This call is being recorded.
Well, I'd like to welcome you to our February conference call. My name is Jim Shapiro, and with me is Stephen Screen.
Hi there.
We are co-founders of the Better Fundraising Co., and it's our honor to host this call. As always, we appreciate you. You are the fundraiser. Thank you for making the world a better place and for doing what you do. We're honored that you give us just a little bit of your time today, and so we're going to really move forward here on this idea of reporting. On today's call, we're going to share with you the best teaching we have on reporting to donors. And by reporting, we mean showing your donors the good that has happened in the world because of their gift. Reporting back to donors on what they accomplished and the things that they've been able to do by giving to your cause. We believe that your donors deserve to be reported to. That's really at the heart of what we do, isn't it, Stephen? It's that reporting portion of Ask, Think, Report, Repeat. They gave to your organization in good faith and deserve to know that their gift made a difference, and so it's your job to help them understand that. There's also a practical side to this as well. Reporting to your donors will increase your donor retention. Really, that's the number of donors you keep year over year. And if you do it right, your reporting will also raise you more money, which is really the whole goal of fundraising. So by the way, if you want more helpful content than this call can hold, you can go to betterfundraising.com and subscribe to our blog. We just did a whole series, actually, these last few weeks on reporting. All right, Stephen, let's get to it, this concept of reporting and how we can do it with our donors.
Great. I want to begin by sharing two reasons why reporting is so important, why it really is one of the building blocks of successful fundraising in North America today, really all over the world. So the first big idea I want to share with you is that there's almost always a difference between what an organization thinks about a donor's gift and what a donor thinks about their gift. And if you can understand the difference, which I'm going to unpack here in just a second, if you can understand this difference, you're going to be incredibly successful when you report to your donors and as a fundraiser in general. So here's the difference. Most organizations, when they receive a gift, they internalize, they believe that the gift means that the donor is supporting the organization. And in my 25 years experience, that is usually not the case. What's actually happening is that what most donors are internalizing, what most donors are thinking, is that their gift means they're going to help a beneficiary or somehow solve a problem or make the world a better place. So there's a really big difference there between what an organization tends to think, the donor is supporting us, versus what the donor thinks, which is, I want to help someone or help the cause or make the world a better place. In response to this, what most organizations do that is in error is they tend to share with their donors all the work that the organization's been doing. And they tend to share with their donors what a good job the organization has been doing in an effort to show donors that the organization is good at what it does, in an effort to show donors that they are competent. But what most donors are looking to hear is whether their difference made a difference in the life of a beneficiary, or if the problem they were giving to solve has been solved, or if the world is a better place because they gave a gift. And that's a really big difference. So when reporting, when you are reporting, you're going to be more successful if you focus on showing your donor less about your organization and more about how a beneficiary or problem is better because of the donor's gift.
You know, Stephen, I have two thoughts. One, for our callers, they should know that in their inbox is an illustration or a picture that we wanted to send them. We thought about this last minute, so we apologize for that, but it's in your inbox. It's the virtuous circle. It's a picture we're going to talk through here in just a few minutes. So if by chance you're by your computer and you can log in and get that email, great. If not, we'll definitely include it in the follow-up to the call. So just wanted to alert you of that being there. The thought I had, Stephen, while you were talking is that I should mention that this is just sometimes not true for major donors. Some major donors who know a lot about the organization or who know a lot about the cause will absolutely give to support the organization.
That's right.
And so when we teach this thing, we recognize that there are some major donors that just doesn't quite fit. The shoe isn't quite fit for them. But we want to make clear, most donors, most of the time, notice how I'm emphasizing most donors most of the time, are giving to help a person or solve a specific problem or to make the world a better place. So today, right now, we're talking about most donors. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about majors, but we're talking most donors most of the time.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's really good to think about that because It's so easy to get caught up in reporting about your organization rather than about the good things that you have caused to be or to change or to fix. And so you really want to sort of internalize this difference between what a donor thinks and what an organization thinks when a gift has been made. You want to talk to the felt needs of the donors, right? This is a classic marketing principle. Talk to the felt needs of the donors, which is, did I help somebody or not? And telling them that your organization is competent does not answer the question, did I help somebody or not? So that's sort of big idea number one. Big idea number two is in the graphic that I emailed you just a few minutes ago, a few minutes before the beginning of this call. We call it the virtuous circle, and hopefully you can call it up on your phone or on your computer. And I'm going to go ahead and talk through this, but most charitable relationships begin with some sort of ask. A potential donor is asked to give a gift, and when she does, she feels great. However, she doesn't know what's going to happen because of her gift. And this is another sort of important thing to know about reporting, is that a gift is different than a purchase. When you make a purchase, when you buy a car, a computer, clothing, a meal, you get the thing and you know whether it was a good use of your money or not. But when a donor gives your organization a gift, he or she, usually she, doesn't receive anything in return to know whether that gift was well spent. So you need to remember that. She does not know if her gift to you was a good idea or was worth the money. So as we continue to move our way around the virtuous circle, the first thing we do is we thank her. That's your thank you notes and your printed receipt packages. And if she's well thanked, she knows that her gift was received. She knows that her gift was appreciated. But again, moving around the circle, she still doesn't know if her gift made a difference. And that's where we come to what we call the report or reporting. This is where your donor sees how her gift makes a difference or made a difference. I should use the past tense there. Because, again, continuing around the circle, if your donor has seen how her gift made a difference, then she feels great, she trusts your organization, and is more likely to give again. Then you can repeat. That's where we get ask, thank, report, repeat. You can repeat this rhythm, and every time you do, you increase the chances that your donors will give, you increase the chances that they will give more, and you increase the chances that she is going to stay with your organization. The more you go around the circle, it is virtuous, the more you'll keep your donors.
Stephen, as you're talking, I have just almost like a visual here. You talked about the trust that happens so that we can repeat. This is kind of new for me to say, but it's like we're building the bridge to trust. This report really is allowing us to increase the level of trust, level of confidence in us as the major gift officer, as a fundraiser, yeah. But more importantly, her trust in the organization. And we're going to do what we say we're going to do with her money.
Yeah, that's right. When Jim and I speak publicly, we often ask what percentage of the organizations in the room do a good job of reporting back to their donors on the good that's been caused. And usually that's maybe 20%. Maybe. It's often closer to 10. So what that means is 8 or 9 out of 10 organizations do a lousy job of reporting. They are not building trust with their donors. But if you and your organization do a great job of reporting, which we're going to pull apart and talk about how to do today, you're going to build trust. You're going to earn the right to ask again. You're going to keep your donors for longer.
That's great. Just a reminder, you can email me your questions, jim@betterfundraising.com, as we go about unpacking this reporting concept, jim@betterfundraising.com.
Yep. So let's get back into reporting. Hopefully you see now why it's so important. After all, if you never report to your donors, why should she give you a gift again? Why would she know that doing so was a good decision? Let's talk about how to do it well, so that you keep more of your donors and raise more money right away. And the first thing I want to do here is set a little bit of context that's just really helpful to know, especially for new fundraisers. But for about the last 60 years, you could argue 70 or 80 years, but for about the last 60 years, there's been a very effective model for how organizations have reported to their donors. The model works like crazy, and you should use it for your organization, or at least know about it. And it goes something like this. It's really simple. Organizations would ask for money in their appeal letters and then report back to donors in their newsletters. This model is still the gold standard for retaining your donors and raising more money, and it's why any organization that's been around for a long time invariably has a series of appeal letters that go out throughout the year and a series of newsletters that go out throughout the year. And so if you're a small organization today and you don't have a newsletter, I am thrilled you are listening, because this is such a great opportunity for you to learn from those who have gone before us in how to make a newsletter that's really effective, and just the idea that you need to be reporting to your donors if you want to keep them. So what does this mean for you? Well, it means that you should have a printed newsletter. There are three main reasons why you should have a printed newsletter. And by the way, we're going to talk briefly about electronic newsletters a little bit later on. But printed newsletters do so much more and are so much more effective. That's why we're talking about them first. So three reasons you should have a printed newsletter and why this is such a good vehicle for reporting. Number one, most donors are older. The average age of a donor in the United States is 69 years old. And they respond to print better. All of the data about this is really clear, you guys. They are more likely to respond to a printed piece than they are to electronic. So you want to have a printed newsletter. Number two, people spend more time with printed reports than emailed reports. I was already hinting at this in number one. Your chances of communicating your message have increased if you print it out as opposed to emailing it, where it can so easily be put in a spam folder, deleted, or ignored. And then finally, yes, print does cost more, but it works a lot better for most charities. And that's why most charities take the time and money to create a regular printed newsletter.
Stephen, can I interrupt you here just for a second? Because as you're talking and teaching these things, it's reminding me of the things that you and I call magical moments. Really those moments that we as fundraisers can give our donors when they see that their gift was needed and that it made a powerful difference. It's those magical moments that really we're able to give to those donors. And reporting, specifically in a great newsletter, is one of those proven ways for those magical moments to happen. You know, when you do this as a fundraiser, you're going to love sending great newsletters to your donors. It really makes you feel great because you know that you're making them feel great. You're going to love how you feel doing it, and the response you get from your donors is really amazing. After we work with organizations, they often hear from their major donors and their major donors about how they felt, how they made a big difference in the world, how their gift really manifests itself. And that's often accomplished by new and again accompanied by new larger gifts. It's this idea that you know, when we report back to our donors and they feel great, they are moved to give more money.
Yeah, we going back to the 80% of organizations whose donors aren't reported back to, your donors love to hear the good news that their gifts made a difference. They love it, you guys. And so if you can send them a powerful report, they're going to love hearing it. They're going to be much more likely to give you a gift, another gift, and a larger one. So, Jim, you're really onto something there when you were mentioning major donors. And so we want to spend the next few minutes on the call on reporting to major donors. Here's why we're going to talk about that first. If your organization is like most organizations, 80 to 90% of your revenue from individual donors comes from about 10% of your donors. In fundraising 20, 30 years ago, it used to be that 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your donors. But these days, that ratio is changing, and it's closer to a 90-10. 90% of most organizations' revenue from individual donors comes from just 10% of the donors. So if you're going to prioritize which donors to be reporting to, in other words, which donors to keep giving to your organization, it's that 10%. You want to prioritize reporting to your major donors. And by the way, if you're calling in from a small nonprofit today, that you don't have a handle on this sort of big idea that most of your revenue is coming from a very small number of your donors, this is something that you want to prioritize. You want to figure out which donors are providing the lion's share of your revenue and prioritize your reporting to them. So, Jim, talk to us about specifically reporting back to major donors.
You know, one of the great ideas that our clients have is to use the existing printed newsletter and send it to their majors, but they do it in a special way. So I just want to stop there for a second, Steve, and say pretty much we are using a piece of content that's already been created. We're not creating something new in this particular case. We're using the existing newsletter. So
yeah.
That's really helpful for a smaller shop, someone who's trying to do multiple things.
That's right. And later in this call, we're going to pull apart how to make a really fantastic newsletter, give you step-by-step instructions. But this is a great place where you can take an existing piece, your printed newsletter, and with just a little bit of special treatment, make it awesome for your major donors.
Perfect. So this is what I recommend folks doing. Number one, don't fold it. Put it in a 9x12 envelope, a larger envelope, so it really stands out in the mail. In fact, it might even be special delivered because your mailbox, the donor's mailbox, might not be able to handle it or hold it. With that newsletter that has not been folded, delivered in a larger envelope, include a cover letter with it. In that cover letter, talk to them about how they're important, how they're making the world a better place, how their gift has been used, and tell them some stories and kind of highlight the stories in the newsletter via your cover letter. For major donors, they love that extra touch. They love to hear from the executive director or from the person that's written the cover letter to really see what's inside the newsletter. So just to kind of unpack that for a second, use your existing newsletter, but just treat the outer envelope and some of the content that goes with it with a little bit kind of higher level of treatment and attention. Not using the newsletter, so if you want to go beyond your existing newsletter, there's also other ways you can report back to your majors. One is to create an actual customized report. You know, some of your major donors are giving for specific projects, they're giving for specific reasons, or for a specific campaign, and you can draft a report specific to them. Use their name. Again, the content is delivered and created to them, telling them what happened in the project they funded or the people group that they're supporting, whatever outcome that you're providing. But this is not a mass-produced newsletter. This is a very specific report to those donors. This is in one of those cases, Stephen, where if you know the donor well enough, you could actually go into a little bit more detail than you would in a standard newsletter report. You might talk just a little bit about some of the financial outcomes, but mostly we want to center this on stories. We want to talk about how the donor's gift made a difference in the life of someone in need or in the outcomes that you provide. But it's customized specifically to the donor. You know, one thing I love, Stephen, is the old power of the cell phone and the iPhone. There's other ways we can be reporting beyond the newsletter, beyond the customized report. We can be doing what we call mini reports to our major donors. We'll talk about technology later. I kind of bring it up now, but any snapshot or quick report you can send to your donors, please do. So let's say you have kids at camp. You run a summer camp for kids, and the donor was able to make a gift to help a handful of kids go to camp. Text them a photo of kids at camp. Have the child at camp write them a note, something along those lines where they can directly connect with the beneficiary right there in that moment. There's a lot of power in the iPhone or power in the handwritten report or note back to the donor because they gave a gift. So those are just three simple examples, I think, Stephen. As we look at major donors specifically, we want to treat them a little bit different than our mass and our mids. We want to customize some of the communications. But putting my hat on as a major gift person or as a fundraising director, I also want to make my job a little bit easier if we can use some of our existing content.
Yeah, and then with that is the idea that you want to put your money and your time where your money comes from. And so you could make a really good argument, you guys, that you ought to spend 90% of your time in reporting back to the 10% of donors who are creating 90% of your revenue. Make sure you allocate time and resources to report back to your major donors. And for your major donors, you can even ask them specific questions. Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, you gave to support the kids' camp. Tell me, what can I show you from the kids' camp that you would like to see? And then go get that report for that donor. You can't do that for every donor. You can't do that for the $50 donor. But for Mr. and Mrs. Johnson or Rodriguez or McKenzie who gave you $10,000, you sure should be taking the time to do customized reports like that. So all these are sort of helpful tactics and tips, right, for lack of a better word. But so, Jim, reinforce the purpose. Why are we doing this reporting for makers?
Yeah, there's a couple points here, Stephen. Really, number one is you want your major donors to know that their gift made a difference. We shouldn't assume that they know. Even if they're on your board or a close friend of the organization, we just shouldn't make that assumption. We really want them to know that their gift ultimately made a difference.
So they need a concrete report, ideally photographic evidence.
That's exactly right. The other, another point is you want them to feel it, you know, through stories of beneficiaries. This is the power of story. You know, you wrote that ebook a while back, Stephen, about storytelling. Storytelling is kind of a big thing right now. And through stories of beneficiaries, your donors can really feel their gift in action. You don't want them to have to wade through a lot of statistics or numbers. I think that's a common mistake. We lead with statistics. We lead with numbers.
Yeah.
And we don't want them to have to wade through that. You know, some major donors, as we said before, would want those stats. They would want that information. They'd want the numbers, but not many. Most of them want to hear the story and kind of experience what their gift had done.
Yeah.
And then third is you always want your major donors to really feel special. You know, I believe that every gift matters, right? The $2 gift is just as important as the $20,000 gift in the big picture of giving. But as you just said earlier, we know that most of the money is coming from a few people. And so those major donors, we really want them to feel special. So anything we can do to send them, you know, customized reports or other communications, as I mentioned earlier, that's really important. And as you said a few minutes ago, Stephen, it's worth it because they gave you such a big percentage of your revenue. We should make sure that they are feeling the love and feeling the attention that they so much deserve.
Yeah, that's right. So to recap the call sort of so far, two really big ideas. One is the power and importance of reporting about how you need to be doing this if you want to be keeping your donors and growing. And then the second big idea is focusing your first effort, your first moment on reporting on your major donors. You really want to make sure your majors are well reported to because they're the donors you are most interested in keeping.
So, Stephen, we have a handful of questions on the email inbox, so
great.
If you mind answering some of these, then we'll get into the second part of our conversation.
Right.
One email comes through and says, this individual works for a K-12 school foundation, and a majority of their parents, which I would also assume would be their donors,
yep,
are under the age of 65. Would you still suggest a printed newsletter?
Yes. If only because I know of no e-newsletter that has ever outperformed a printed newsletter. I just have never seen one that works better than print. And so do you want both? Yeah, if I had to do only one, I would do a printed one.
That's great. Another question, we haven't talked about this much because we haven't got into the design elements of the newsletter yet, but the question's a good one. What size is best for the reply device to accompany a newsletter? Should it be separate from the reply envelope? Should it be separate from the newsletter?
Yeah, so I'll talk about this more a little later, but the short answer is it should be a third of a page. In other words, about 3.5 by 8.5. And should be separate from the reply envelope. It should not be what's called a bang tail, where you have that large flap on your reply envelope. You want to avoid that because those are proven to reduce giving.
That's great. One comment, and then we'll go on here, Stephen. One of our listeners emailed in, and said, just as if on cue, my executive director walked into my office to give me some positive feedback from one of the major donors that they just currently sent a donor-centric major donor newsletter to. So, Ben, thanks for sending that in. We love it. And when your executive director or CEO sees the fruits of it, that's even better. So
yeah,
that's so encouraging to hear that.
Yeah. Well done doing that, Ben. Most organizations just aren't reporting that well to their major donors. And you just drastically increased the chances that donor is going to give to your organization again and even increase their gift. So well done.
And just a side note, a handful of you did not receive the virtuous circle. Maybe it's in cyberspace somewhere or spam folder, but just have confidence that we are going to send you a follow-up email to this call and you'll receive it. So we apologize for not having it right this second, but you'll have it following up.
Yep,
this call.
You guys, that's my fault. I thought of that at the very end and thought, oh, we should send this out. my bad.
All good.
Okay, so should we get back to reporting?
Yeah, let's do it.
We talked about how it's important. We talked about doing it for major donors. Let's now talk about reporting for mass donors, which is basically everyone else who it doesn't make sense to be sending customized high-end reports for. We talked earlier about doing a printed newsletter. That's an absolute must, even if you think it is too expensive. Let's talk more about that, really. That's the right thing, because I'm going to get into the specifics here. There are so many details to go through. And I suppose if you're already sort of doing a newsletter that's delighting your donors and retaining them and raising lots of money, you can sort of skip this part. But if you're not doing that, we're going to get into the details for how to do this to report effectively and to raise a lot of money. So number one, it should be printed. We've already talked about that. We'll talk about format and colors and photos, all that in a second. But the main idea that I want to give to you right now is that it needs to be donor-focused. Because remember, most organizations, they're not wondering what you did with their gift. They're wondering what happened because they gave. So they're not wondering what your organization did. They're wondering what they did, what they made happen. So what you need to be doing is writing to them about what they made happen. So that means you don't have stories about your organization's programs. It means you don't have stories about your organization's staff members or volunteers. It means you have stories about beneficiaries. It means you have stories about the changes that take place in the world because of your work. Not how you do it, but what it is that happens because donors give. And it also means that as you write this, you should be writing to the donor about what she did. So it shouldn't be, you know, organization, here at organization ABC, we did this, that, and the other thing. Thank you so much for partnering with us. Instead of that, and again, I give examples of this later, you want to say, donor, your gift makes A, B, and C happen. You want to write to her about what she's doing. That's really the key, is to make it feel to her and about her, not about your organization. And so I mentioned a couple times that you want your newsletter to have, and really any reporting, to have stories of beneficiaries. Why is that? The best way we have found to do this, and this is through extensive testing, is by telling stories of individuals whose lives have been changed by the organization, and then giving credit for that change to the donor. And I'm going to repeat that like a good preacher here. The best way we've found to report to donors so that they feel, that not know, but so that they feel their gifts made a difference, is by telling stories of individuals whose lives have been changed by the organization, and then giving the credit for that change to the donor. And the simple math, so to speak, behind that is that stories work better than statistics. I did multiple tests back in my big agency days where we would tell the same story and we would frame it with statistics, or we would frame it with sort of the personal narrative of what was going on. And every single time we began things with a statistic or a big number, we raised less money. It was really, really clear that in reporting, tell stories, don't use big numbers.
Stephen, can I throw you a curveball?
Yeah.
See if you can hit it. Because I was in a training session last week, and this question came up right in this moment of this type of training.
Mm-hmm.
What does an organization do if they have other content like statistics, like program descriptions, mm-hmm. like, hey, we just bought 10 new computers, or we got a new van, or here's the new board member list? What do they do with that content? Do they create a separate newsletter? What happens in that environment? Because most folks, I believe, probably even on this call, are using their newsletter to be more organization-centric and to talk more about the organization.
Yeah,
so there's this quandary they find themselves in.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say something that's really hard for then most everybody on the call to hear, but most of your donors don't care about any of that stuff. They're just not that interested. So though it's important to you and to some major donors and to your board, it's not important enough to be saying it to your mass donors. Should you say it to your board? Absolutely. Should you say it to the major donors who care about those things? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But to everybody else, there really isn't a great place to put it unless you have a blog on that. That's fine. If you want to put it in an e-newsletter that no one's going to read, that's fine. But the donor is not interested, because that's an organizational-centric piece of information. The donor is more interested more of the time in what she did and how many new computers you got, or some new statistic that hey, 10% of kids in our county are never going to go to the symphony. They don't care.
You know, the key word, and this is, I'm kind of saying this jokingly, but the key word in there is donor.
Yeah.
Because most organizations, let's say organization A has a database of 5,000 names on the database,
mm-hmm.
but only 500 of those gave a gift in 2017.
That's right.
Should we be mailing a newsletter to the 4,500 people that did not give us a gift?
Yeah, that's a perfect question. The donor-centered newsletters that we're talking about in this call should only be mailed to your donors who have given a gift in the last 24 months. They should not go to volunteers. They shouldn't go to customers. They shouldn't go to names that you've acquired somehow. This is a newsletter to donors. And let me give you a perfect example of this. I got on the emailing list about 12 years ago for an organization called Orbis that does vision stuff. And I got an e-newsletter from them yesterday that said, thank you, you gave Ahmed his sight. And my first thought was, well, that's a good donor-focused reporting. And then I thought, that's ridiculous. I haven't given this organization in 10 years. I did not give that kid his sight. So when you're sending reporting newsletters to non-donors, you're saying something to them that is not true. And so what you want to – and you this sounds harsher than I mean it, but you don't want to spend so much money and time on non-donors because they're not giving you any money. So you basically only want to spend the money to print newsletters to go to donors.
So that's a real big strategic decision for an organization because
yeah.
You as an organization may decide that it's important to mail to the 4,500 people that have not given you a gift for whatever reason, because
yeah.
You want to stay connected because of public relations, because they might be volunteers. You just need to make that decision. Just recognize that decision needs to be made
yeah.
Because we could save you money right now by saying stop mailing those 4,500 and you will improve your results and save
yeah.
money in the process.
And you guys, the professional organizations, they will have a donor newsletter and then they will have a newsletter sort of for everything else that goes to non-donors. But don't make the assumption that sending a newsletter to non-donors will turn them into donors, because so I have been doing this for about 25 years now, and newsletters are an ineffective tool to turn a non-donor into a donor. The best way to do that is a targeted appeal letter asking the donor to do something really simple. Don't waste the money sending your donor newsletter to non-donors. And the other part is, if you try to make a newsletter that does two things, meaning talks to volunteers and donors, it's going to do neither of those things well. So, and I have all sorts of testing experience to prove this, but it's really hard, right? Fundraising is hard. You got to make some tough decisions here.
Yep. Stephen, I threw the fastball and you hit it. That's a great answer.
Okay.
We got a couple of questions coming in on that topic, but I'll hold us off here towards the end.
Okay.
Maybe we could shift a little bit into e-news, because I know paper wins, you know, it matters. I
yep.
believe that's one of the topics we're going to talk about is some of the e-news recommendations and how those things work.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, fundraising is the best job in the whole world, and I love to be joyful about fundraising, but I have some hard news to share for most organizations, and that is for the vast majority of organizations, your e-newsletter is not worth your time. We're just going public with this recommendation this year because in our work over the last couple of years, we see that e-newsletters have really low open rates, really low engagement rates, and really low reading rates. And you guys are just not being read. They're just not doing the things that they exist to do. So that's hard because for many small organizations that have small budgets, they are sending an e-newsletter out and they're hoping that it fulfills the reporting need. And it's just not working. Here are our recommendations based on that reality. Now, if you have an e-newsletter that's going out and you're consistently raising a bunch of money from it, great. By all means, keep doing it. In fact, please email me and tell me how you're doing it. But we don't know any organization that has less than 100,000 email addresses that is raising significant money with an e-newsletter, or maybe better said, raising anywhere near what you could be raising with a printed newsletter. And it's not fulfilling the reporting function either. So here are our recommendations. Either stop producing or cut way back on your e-newsletter. And if you're currently making an electronic version of your printed newsletter, you don't need to do it because it's just, in the vast, vast majority of cases, it's just not worth the time if you're talking to donors. And instead of that, what you want to be doing is sending out regular personal emails from your executive director where she tells a story from the field in a personal way. And basically what we're doing is we're taking a newsletter which is full of stories, and you want to focus on one story and have your ED tell it in a really personal way. Send one of those out at least once a month. Feature one story in each of them. It's it's reporting. We're not asking for money here, but have a small link at the bottom of the email if a person wants to give another gift today, because some people will. And then format the email to look as personal as possible. Try, you want to strip out your fancy header image or sidebar with upcoming events, all that stuff. You want to make it feel like it came from your ED's Outlook and is a personal email to the donor telling them a great story of a thing that they made happen this month. Do that, and then you are on your way to fulfilling the reporting function in email.
Stephen, I appreciate you giving some fresh new advice around e-news. It's important for us because here at Better Fundraising, we're always studying data, studying the results, studying how donors respond. And I appreciate you kind of adding some fresh perspective on the e-news. We have a couple questions. I know we're going to get advanced here. We're going to kind of go next level into really how to build and design and deliver great newsletters.
Yep.
Just give me 1 minute here because I have a couple questions in the pipeline. Some of these might be coming, so maybe we're hitting the ball before.
I'll say pass if they're
great.
About to come up.
How often do you suggest sending a newsletter?
At least 3 or 4 a year, printed. And if you're making money on them or breaking even, send another one.
Right.
And if you're making money and breaking even, send another one. I know organizations that have sent 12 newsletters a year, one a month.
Yep. And not to go too far in the weeds, but we can actually raise money from these newsletters, and keep in mind that it's when donors feel great, when they feel reported to, when they feel great about their giving. Again, they trust you, they go deeper, and they will give you, they'll send you checks again when you thank and report.
Yeah. And here's the reason why you send more than you probably think you need to. It's because most donors don't open the mail.
Yep.
Your open rate for physical mail is maybe 50%. So if you send out 4 newsletters, that means maybe most donors got 2 of them.
Yep.
Right? So that's why you want to do more than you think. Your board may say, oh my gosh, 4 newsletters, that's way too many. That's because your board looks for them, opens everyone, reads the whole world, reads all of it, lets you know when there's typos. But most of your donors aren't paying attention. They don't open everything. So you need to communicate to them more than you think you do.
That's good. Stephen, this question's for me. The question is, we have major donors that give from a workplace giving campaign.
Mm.
And so it's difficult for us to actually get the report in their hands because those workplace giving campaigns, it comes in as one check. You don't really actually have the donor information.
Yeah.
Should we send copies of the newsletter to the workplace to be distributed? And my answer is yes. Any way you can get that newsletter in the hand of a donor, do it.
Yeah.
Be it hand deliver it, talk to the executive director at the workplace, whatever it might be. Please do that. Do your best to get that newsletter in the hand of those major donors.
And if you can, have the title of your newsletter be Your Gift at Work.
Yeah.
If you're making one for one workplace, maybe it's like, hey, Microsofty, here's your gift at work.
Yeah.
Right? Speak right to them. Don't make it about your organization. Make it about their gift. And donors are wonderful, generous, compassionate, self-interested people who would like to see what their gift did. So talk to them about what they did.
One last question, Stephen, and I'm really looking forward to you digging into the details here of newsletters. The question has to do with my example I gave about 5 minutes ago about don't talk about the computers, don't talk about the van being purchased, don't talk about the stats and the process. And someone wrote in and said, what if the donor bought the computers? Well, my answer is this. For that specific donor, you most definitely can send them a report about the computers.
Yeah.
And let's say these computers are going to help kids after school. Tell a story of a child who's getting after school education, who's going to be using the computer. Most definitely, you can report back to that specific donor about the computers. And potentially, in a mass donor newsletter, you could use a story of a child who's going to use the new computer, but you're not going to talk about the computer. You're going to talk about the child who lacks technology or doesn't have education resources. So,
when it's a big gift like that, talk to that donor about that gift.
Yeah.
But the mistake most small nonprofits make is they say they get a gift of 10 computers, then they do a newsletter story all about how they have all new computers. And the message that sends to donors is, my $50 gift doesn't matter. Right? So I'm a donor. I'm sitting there, oh, they got this new computer lab. Oh, they're getting money from Microsoft. They're massive donors. My gift must not be needed that much.
No.
And so that's not the message that you want to send.
Yep, that's great. Let's dig into kind of the advanced level here for newsletters. So turn up your volume. Get your pencil out. This is going to be from one of the best in the country, Stephen Screen, talking about how to build your newsletters.
Yeah. And so I'm going to sort of put an asterisk at the beginning of this and say, I'm going to go through this pretty fast because, you know, we have 10-ish minutes left and then leave time for questions. So I'm going to go through this fast, but remember, we're recording this and we're going to send you the recording. So, get the big ideas, but don't worry about writing every detail because we're going to send it to you. So here's a whole bunch of tips about making what we call a donor-delighting, money-raising printed newsletter. And all of these recommendations were developed in head-to-head testing over hundreds of newsletters to millions of donors, comparing the results and seeing what worked best. So this is not what we like. This is what donors across the country tend to respond to best. Here are the specs. Number one, send it in an envelope, not as a self-mailer. Sending it as a self-mailer is a guaranteed way to raise less money. You want it to be about 4 pages. It can be more, it can be less, but generally speaking, 4 is about right. What we generally do is take what's called a tabloid-sized sheet of paper, 8.5 by 17, and when you fold it in half, you get a 4-page newsletter. You want to include a separate reply device, a reply card, like we talked about earlier on the call, about 3.5 inches by 8.5 inches. And then include a number 9 reply envelope that's pre-addressed for your organization. That reply card is in there to remind donors that they can give a gift right now and help even more people. And then that envelope is in there to make it even easier for them to do so. Those are the specs. We have done that for so many different organizations, it's ridiculous, and most of the time it works like crazy. It won't always work the first time, you guys. It will take a little while to make a great newsletter. It's not, there is no easy button. If there was, every organization would have one of these and they'd be printing money. It takes a little while to get it right. So I just want to say that out right up front.
Stephen, one of the things I want to pull out, just a big picture idea as a fundraiser, it is our job to make it as easy as possible for the donor to send in her next gift. And that reply card, reply envelope is one of those ways we make it easy for her to send in her next gift.
Yep.
So
same reason we include a reply card and a reply envelope in receipts. To make it easy for the donor to give another gift right then if she would like to. Okay, stories. Generally speaking, you want to have 3 stories of beneficiaries or some sort of positive outcomes in your newsletter. That generally works out to 1 story on the front page, 1 story on page 2, and 1 story on page 3. Remember here that we're talking about outcomes, not process. So as you're writing about these people you have helped or the way you're helping your cause, you don't want to write about the success of your program or so much the methods for how your program created these things. You want to talk about the outcomes. So if you're teaching math to junior high students, you want to write about 1 junior high student who was failing at math but now is getting a solid B. That's a much better story to a donor than, let me tell you about, we work in 17 schools for an average of 45 minutes each, and we have 7 instructors per kid, and we work with them for blah, blah, blah. That's not what you're looking for. You want to know Jimmy was really struggling in math, then let me tell you about how Jimmy is doing today thanks to your gift. So there are lots more tips about what to include or not to include on our blog recently. So consider that a plug for the blog. We've done a bunch of work on newsletters specifically and reporting in general in the last month. Headlines of your newsletters. Let me give you a secret about newsletters. It's not going to be read. Your newsletter is going to be scanned by your donors. Not read. We generally assume that about 80% of donors are going to scan this thing, and the only thing they're going to read are the headlines and the picture captions. So you want to do a really good job with your headlines and picture captions. and you want to make them outcome-oriented or filled with drama. And you want to use the word you, as in the donor, as often as you can. And here's sort of the tip I use as I am reviewing newsletters. I ask myself the question, can I look at just the headlines in just a few seconds and get a good sense of what my gift did? And if I can't do that, that means that the headlines need to go back to the writer and have them worked on more. Because, again, remember, the majority of people are not going to read your newsletters. They're not going to read past the first paragraph in your stories. Does the whole thing have to be written well? Absolutely. But Just remember, 80% of your people aren't going to read that much, so you got to do a really good job with your headlines, picture captions, and first paragraphs, because they're just scanning. Let me talk for a second about the back page of your newsletter. This is where you can really make a difference. You've done 3 pages of reporting, 3 beneficiary stories, now, and you have just built up a bunch of goodwill with your donors, a bunch of, wow, this organization did great stuff with my gift. I can trust them. I can really make a difference. This is where we turn that feeling into action, because some donors are going to be motivated to do more, to have more success. So on the back page of newsletters, what we recommend is to present some kind of need that the donor can meet with a gift today. And even though we're doing reporting here, we kind of want to think about this as a little mini appeal letter. There's some specific need. Ideally, it's the same kind of need that you have been talking about meeting in the first 3 pages of your newsletter. And give them both an opportunity and a reason to give today. And if you do that, you're going to raise a lot more money. So the final thing I'll say about that back page of the newsletter, and this is hard-won knowledge, is that the lower third of your back page should be almost a carbon copy of your reply device. We call it a faux reply device. And we started putting those on the back page of newsletters to try to remind donors that they could give a gift today if they wanted to. And when we did that, we found out that we got about a 15% increase in giving every time we did that on the back of a newsletter. So that's our default setting now, and we always do that.
Stephen, one question actually came in on that specific area. It says, this person says, I always feel like reporting should be reporting and kept separate from an ask being attached.
Yep.
Is the envelope just the soft ask and nothing specific is put in the report or newsletter?
So it's basically we keep the ask or a statement of need to that back page of the newsletter. And that's where I would keep it. And then have the reply card match whatever that need is. So if you're talking about more junior high kids need math tutoring, on the reply card say, here's my gift to do more tutoring to junior high kids.
Yeah, that's great. I've come up with my own term. I call it a fundraising tale. I mean, this report is a report. It has 3 stories. It has a lot of good news about how the donor's gift was at work, but she feels great. We need to give her a chance to give her next gift.
Yep, that's right. And every newsletter I know of that is raising a bunch of money has something like this at the end. Mm-hmm. It's where you take this goodwill and turn it into action. Not every donor will want to give to this type of thing. That's fine. Not every donor wants to give to your appeal letters. But the for donors who are unused to being reported to and for donors who are motivated by success, this is how you turn that feeling into action for those donors.
Yep. They feel great. They want to do it again.
Yep.
Stephen, what happens? So you gave us a good kind of meat on the bones there. What's going to happen now when folks start to report? What's going to kind of become the fruit of this work?
Yeah. I mean, this is the exciting part. If you're really great at reporting in general, and, you know, we've been talking a lot about printed newsletters, but if you're good at reporting, your reporting is going to raise money. I know that's sort of crazy, right? But it absolutely will happen. If you can get back to donors about what donors care about, they will love to give you more money. And so, you know, for newsletters that are working barely or not working, usually what that means is you're reporting back to donors on things that the organization cares about more than the donor. So then you have work to do to go figure out what it is that's really motivating your donors to give. For major donors, you can take the time and money to go ask them. For mass donors, it's usually doing more newsletters and reporting on different types of things to find the thing that really moves the needle for your donors. So if you're reporting great, you're going to raise money from your reporting, and you're going to retain more of your donors. Because when donors see that their previous gifts made a difference, they're far more likely to give you another gift. And you can sense this, right? Take your fundraising hat off for a moment and put your donor hat on. Do you remember giving gifts to organizations and never hearing that your gift made a difference? Because and I'm sure that made you less likely to give to that organization again. And what we're trying to make happen today is to make sure that situation never happens to your organization, that your donors hear that their gifts made a big difference so that they are more likely. to give you another gift. And each time a donor gives you a gift, she's more statistically like you to give you another gift. So getting gifts from reports, even though that sort of sounds like it's against our principles, it's actually absolutely in line with them, because every time you get a gift from another donor, you have retained her, and she's more likely to give to you again.
Stephen, we have a couple of other questions come in online, obviously, via the email inbox. One has to do with annual reports. This is a common question when we get to the topic of reporting. And I know that we have both opinion and also kind of proven results around annual reports. Want to unpack that a little bit, and I can add some comments as well.
And what's the question specifically?
How does the annual report play in this reporting process?
Yeah. So the annual report, a lot of years ago, used to play a really big role in reporting. It plays less and less and less of a role, to the point now where we advise our clients not to send annual reports to donors.
Mass donors.
To mass donors. If your major donors need it, fine. If you need to make it for your foundation partners and for legal reasons, fine, do it. But annual reports tend to be massively organizational focused. We helped this many kids this year. We provided this many nights of shelter. We worked on this legislation. We saved that meadow. It's a whole bunch of organizational stuff. We call it bragging, not reporting. And it's really hard to make annual reports into donor-centric devices. By the way, for the organizations that we've done that, where we've made that shift successfully, the annual report starts to raise money and not cost money. But for the most part, we don't send it. A good donor-centric newsletter is a better tool for 95% of your donors to report to them than an annual report.
Yep, and I'll just add one thing we have done with some clients that still feel like they need to produce an annual report is we create a great donor-centered newsletter, mm-hmm. and we create an annual report insert. One page, two-sided, that has some of the stats and the results and all those things.
Yep.
We don't send it to every donor. We don't send it to the mass, but we create the newsletter. We put the insert in there for the majors, for the foundations, for the board members, and everyone seems to be happy. And we put a version of it online via PDF or electronic link so they can refer it or reference it later or link it to a donor email. So. There was a question about should we do print versus e, and this would be the same thing. If we're going to do a newsletter,
yep.
we're going to do an annual report insert, it should be paper. That's the end of that conversation. So thanks for that question, that double-sided question there. We appreciate it.
Yep.
There's a couple more questions regarding the content of the newsletter. So if an organization is asking for multiple things, should everything make the newsletter? Should everything make the report? Meaning if they're asking for food, for malaria, for malaria pills, for education, like what actually makes the cut?
In our experience, newsletters that are only talking about one thing are more effective than newsletters that are talking about all the things. So if you're a World Relief Organization and you have, you know, malaria programs and hunger programs and intestinal my total vocabulary got lost. But you want to have three story. If malarianess is a thing you do, you want to have three stories about malarianess, and then have the need on the back page be about malarianess. If you're a school, you want to have three programs about the math program. If you're raising funds for the math program, that is going to be more effective at getting people to say yes than here are all the things.
That's really good, Stephen. It's been fun to watch all the questions come in. There have been a handful that I haven't been able to respond to right now. I will via email, but really appreciate all that's going on here via this call. Just know that in March we'll be having a call around asking, so you can go to the website and sign up for that or get the year-long pass as well. But really, you know, so this idea of reporting, you know why donors deserve to be reported to now. Stephen did an excellent job unpacking that for us. And you know that if you do it well, you'll both retain more donors and raise more money in the long run, and you'll raise more money in the short run through donations to your newsletters.
Yeah, that's right. That's a couple pretty great reasons to report, whether it's in person to majors or with customized major reports or in a mass donor newsletter. So if you don't have reporting on your agenda, you should. And, I mean, in closing, right, that's it. If you don't report well, start reporting well. Start first reporting well to your major donors. And then next, we would recommend start working on a donor-centered reporting newsletter today. Ideally, you'd get one out in the first half of the year. one during the summer and another one during September or earlier October. We don't recommend doing newsletters in November and December, but so you want to get it out no later than the first or second week of October. And if you do that, by the way, another great thing happens. Your year-end fundraising will go better than it ever has because your donors will know that their gifts to you are needed, and they'll know that their gifts to you make a difference. And you guys, that's a really big idea that most nonprofits aren't communicating to their donors. Most nonprofits are trying to appear competent, appear in control, appear like they're solving all the problems. And really, you know what's top of mind for donors? Donors want to feel needed, and donors want to feel like their gifts make a difference. So if you can do a good job in your donor communications, especially in your reporting of making donors feel like their gifts made a difference to beneficiaries, to the world, you're going to be in great shape, both as a fundraiser and as an organization.
So thank you for joining the call. You will receive a follow-up email that includes a recording of this call and the virtuous circle image. So be watching your inbox for that. And we sure hope that you join us in March for our March call specific to asking. We'll teach you how to become great fundraisers and make the ask. But thank you for taking the time to be on this call. For more information, you can go to betterfundraising.com. We encourage you to go to the blog as well. And just thanks for making the world a better place.
Yeah, thank you for the work that you do. You're on the front lines raising money, making donors happy, making beneficiaries happy. Thank you.